This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here. Welcome to another special guest episode on the Authentic Persuasion Show. Today I have with me Mr. Chuck Hester from A Purpose Partnership, among other things. So he is known as the MacGyver of Marcom, which we're going to talk about. That should be fun. He's the managing partner of A Purpose Partnership. He's also the co-founder of Pay It Forward Tuesdays, which is a business mentoring organization that is provides up-and-coming underserved entrepreneurs and charitable organizations with business advice. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about sales. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about purpose. We're going to talk about his partnership that he has with somebody who's going to be a guest on the show here soon as well. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this. Chuck, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Jason, pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about the first thing. When you say, and you know, obviously it's some kind of title that was given to you, or maybe you did it yourself, and it's good marketing and PR. The MacGyver of Marcom. Let's start with that. What does that mean? Where did that come from?
Well, first of all, it is my branding. It's something that I worked on, and it has stuck. A lot of people start with, oh, and you're the MacGyver of Marcom, so tell me more about what that is, which is exactly what we want when we're branding something to be able to do that. That came about because I've done marketing off and on for 35 plus years, and folks would come to me and say, hey, I've got this marketing problem, or I need this help, or whatever it may be. And it's not necessarily the normal solutions that you can find. So I was a big fan of MacGyver first time around. MacGyver second time around, not so much. But my take on that is, you know, hey, give me a PVC pipe and a Q-tip and duct tape, and I'll probably solve your problem. What it does, and that's part of who I am, is it starts the conversation and gets people interested in talking to you further. So that's kind of the bottom line on that.
Well, and I love that too. And let me ask you, because obviously as a fan of MacGyver myself, it was an amazing show. I love that. And I'm already thinking of something I want to ask you in the after show about those 80s TV shows around that era. Where does that fit in, right? So if I think of MacGyver, I think of, all right, he's in this tough situation. Like you said, PVC pipe, some duct tape, maybe fingernail clippers. And all of a sudden he's created either some bomb or a way to escape a trap or something like that, right? Is where do you blend that, though, with the MacGyver of figuring it out and taping things together and making it work in the realm of a 60-hour, you know, TV show, a 60-minute TV show, to not just taping things together for your clients or for businesses and, like, helping them move past the MacGyver mode, you know, the figure-it-out mode, into the actual, you know, systems and structures?
Well, it's interesting because you talked about my managing partner, Adam Sinkus, who's going to be on your show in the future, and he and I have talked about that. We have what I call, because I used to be in the grocery business at one point in time, in-cap projects that we'll do. In other words, when you walk in the door, you see, oh, you know, spaghetti sauce on sale, but I need milk, and it's always in the back. We have, over the past several months, found projects that we've done. A website fix, or, you know, content blogs that need to be written, or whatever it may be, that were the MacGyver-ish type information and projects that we did that got us in the door, is the best way to describe it. So started a relationship. We solved somebody's problem, and they go, okay, now I know I can rely on this particular organization to help me in marketing, and I want to talk to them further and deepen that conversation. And that's really where it goes. Adam and I work hard on what we've done with A Purpose Partnership, which we'll get into. But basically, I mean, we're what I would describe as the anti-agency, meaning that we're not the senior level strategists to come in and do the great dog and pony show PowerPoints, develop a statement of work, and then hand it off to Joe Jr., who's going to try and put it together for you and do it, and you never see us again until your bill's due. So that's really at the heart of where we are on that.
And so what's the other end of the spectrum? Because you said you're more in the middle. So, you know, there's the high-level marketing advisors that are like, here's what to do and tell you to do it. And then what is the other end of the spectrum that doesn't work as well that you found?
Once we're into the organization, we recommend, well, we have a four-month package basically developing a marketing communications marketing plan. And then that's the other aspect that differentiates. And then over the next 3 months, we actually execute on that plan, as opposed to handing it over to you or to your, you know, your personnel, whoever it may be, and being able to work it that way. So that's the purpose. Partnership was 2 months of solid branding work to develop that name. And that's a big part of that. Purpose meaning stripping away the negative, only accenting the positives, not working with clients that we don't feel comfortable with once we get in, and we've done so. And then the partnership is we're not a vendor. We don't, you know, come in and we're not based on the SOWs and the invoices. We're based on the partnership of success that we're going to develop with you.
Where, with that kind of relationship, both for the people who want to do that kind of work for potential clients and companies, and then also for people who are on the company side thinking about, you know, is someone like you coming in, what gets in the way of somebody not getting help from someone like you?
Well, number one is ego. I mean, I can do it myself. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. I've scrapped this together. I can put it all together and be able to do that. And one of the things we counter with that is, you know, we know you're passionate about your business. That's why you're an entrepreneur. But I can imagine the passion probably isn't marketing. And that's our passion. So we work through on that. And the other part of that is, you know, if folks don't necessarily subscribe to what we are offering strategy-wise, or they say they do, and then we get into tactics and they don't do the tactics that we suggest they do, hard to do a program with measured information, tactical stuff that we're going to do, and then it's not executed on. So that's kind of the biggest part of that.
Yeah, and for people listening or watching, I didn't ask that question as a underhand slow pitch to right. Chuck here for a sales pitch on it. It's more of just getting in the mind of companies and leaders, specifically if you're listening to this and you're a business owner, business leader, sales leader, marketing leader, and it's like, all right, so what could you be doing, especially if you want to get to that next level? And I love what you said, it, like, totally unplanned, but the fact that, you know, that entrepreneur, that business leader, that business owner, what, whoever that is, passionate about what they're passionate about, good at what they're good at, and most likely not passionate about marketing unless they're running a marketing agency and they're passionate about marketing. And then that's a different thing, because they wouldn't be getting you in there to help with marketing, which means bring in the experts that cover in those areas, which I absolutely love. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of my favorite phrases is, a measure of a successful entrepreneur is that they surround themselves with people who are successful at what they do. And so they don't have to try and do everything. They have folks in there that, and we do. I mean, a good, for instance, Adam and I are not bookkeepers, for instance, but we have an awesome bookkeeper who handles all of that. So, you know, and we recognize what we're really good at, and we also recognize when we need help and when we need other partners to come in and help.
Well, and that goes to that ego part. And I see this even at sales leader, sales manager level, where the ego's there of like, well, I'm in this role, so I'm supposed to know everything and I'm supposed to be at the best of this, versus I'm good and I'm amazing at what I do, and I want to surround myself with people who are better than me in all the other areas so that I can focus on what I do best, and then they can do what they do best, and then everyone can win, which is, it's tough to push that, you know, primal ego tendencies aside, especially for someone who started a business or is in a leadership role. They got there based on something, right? Some right. level of ego.
Exactly.
So since this is a sales-related podcast, let's talk about that intersection, which is your focus on marketing, on branding, helping them with that side of the house, if you will, right? The MacGyver of Marcom, and doing those kind of projects. Where do you see success, or I should put it this way, what do companies that you're working with do successfully to bridge between marketing and sales or the revenue ops versus keeping them as silos and perpetually pitting them against each other?
One of my favorite expressions, this has been ever thus, marketing and sales are two different organizations and have a tendency not to want to work together. The ones that are successful are looking at marketing as a way to, for number one, build a brand, but number two, enable salespeople to have something that they can talk to or they can promote, they can use for customer relations, whether it be a white paper, a seminar, in a wide variety of things, social media posts, whatever. If they on the sales side embrace that and see that as something as important, that's one thing. And if management that is actually putting those together on the marketing side looks at it from a sales perspective of bottom line, how is that going to enable my salesperson to have a relationship with a customer and then sell a customer down the line? I'm a big advocate of, know, like, and trust, and it's a case of getting to know people, understanding what comes in. We could go down a rabbit hole, Jason, in regards to the number of, I think we've actually had this conversation, LinkedIn invitations you get, hey, we've got connections with Adam, so we should connect, and the next email that you get from them is, well, we're connecting on LinkedIn, so here's my pitch. So it's building that relationship, and also the sales tool enablement can be as simple as a landing page that we put together that they can point to people to say, hey, here's an ebook on our philosophy in regards to whatever the product they're selling or service they're selling. And it adds to things that they can talk to the clients about, which is probably the most important and difficult thing for salespeople to come up with past their just elevator, what I call the third floor, sixth floor, penthouse pitches,
So where does that silo nature come from? You said they see it as like two separate businesses, but like where is that truly coming from within an organization? Like have you nailed down a source of
that? Yeah, I think there's some extent, and when you have Adam on, he'll probably back me up on this. I am not first of all, he's left brain, I'm right brain. So he's the analytical process, project management, KPI dashboard guy. I think it comes from, the KPI dashboards that you put together for sales are specifically into how many customer touches, how many appointments made, how many sales done, what's the revenue bottom line, whereas marketing has a tendency to be, okay, so how many mentions on social, how many people came to the seminar, is our brand being elevated as a result of what we're doing? They don't necessarily come together. What we do at A Purpose Partnership is we blend that, and we're always looking at bottom line. I'll give you an example. We did a book launch for a company, and we did CTAs to get to a landing page. What we were concerned about is, okay, once that's done, how many appointments are made in there, how many sales are done after that? That was part of the marketing dashboard that we put together for them. So, the silo there is, here's my KPIs, here's your KPIs. The only time it comes together is when we meet with a CEO, as VP of Sales, VP of Marketing, and show, what we're doing. But my biggest consternation is, so why aren't you talking together about how that's going and making those KPIs work for each other?
Well, and when I hear you talk about that, it really just rings true in my mind that the key is the bottom line number, which is the revenue for the company, right? Like, the only thing that matters is the customers and the company, not the silos, not the departments, not everybody's individual KPIs, which are important for keeping score and accountability. You can't play a game without a scoreboard, so you need that. But then, like, what's the point, right? How do you win overall? Not how do you win, but how does the team win, which in this case is the company. When those leaders come together with that CEO meeting, everyone's got their individual data, and then everyone's ready to spin it in the way that they want to spin it to tell the story they want to tell. And then, where's everyone on the same page and transparent?
Yeah.
Which I love that. I think that's a huge lesson for anyone listening. If you want to stop that silo, us versus them, it's usually sales versus everybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for sure. So with what you've seen on the sales side, because again, you're doing the marketing, you're doing the branding, you're feeding sales, like you said, even with the book launch, and it's going to the other things. What are marketing and mostly sales, because this is a sales podcast, what are those teams doing well these days, right? Not just post-pandemic, but late 2022 with consumers and the world the way it is with information and what people are actually looking for. What are the good ones that are scaling and growing and succeeding?
Yeah.
Anything stand out of what they're doing well?
Well, the ones that, and we have a tendency to work with those types, or at least the ones that are open to that type of work, if you will. Again, harking back to Bob Berg and the Go-Givers and Know, Like, and Trust, It's the building of the relationships. A good salesperson, and I've been on the receiving end on good salespeople. It's the people that want to get to know you, to understand your problems, to look at how can I possibly work with you in such a way that you're going to succeed. And honestly, as kind of, I'm the chief sales guy for Purpose Partnership, I'm always looking to understand the issues that they're running into and how we possibly can fit in, as opposed to here's the package 101, and if you buy that, then 102 is 20% discount, you know, those type of things that come into that. So it's the ones that are spending time on relationships. I'll give you a good example, and it's an older example, probably 20 years ago. I have a friend of mine, he worked for IBM, still does, in a different role, but in a sales role, we would go to local networking events in Raleigh, and Eric would walk in the door, and I'd get ready to shake his hand. He'd shake my hand and said, can talk to you when I get 10 cards and when I understand what those issues are for those 10 people, because then I'm going to do follow-up and get to know these people and really nurture that relationship. So it's a lot about, I mean, we talk about lead nurturing. It really is about person nurturing, if you will, and relationship nurturing is more important. Because I mean, I can give you dozens of examples throughout my career of people who have come to me 3 years after our original conversation and say, hey, you know what? I remember you from doing your LinkedIn training and what you've been doing. Now's the time. Let's push the button because I trust you and I got a chance to know you. So that's a big part of that.
Where does that balance with effort and the numbers game? I'm just going to use that in air quotes for anyone listening to the podcast, not seeing me do that, which is, you know, in sales, a lot of people play the numbers game, right? So let's say, you know, like your example with Eric at the networking event, instead of I'm going to get 10 cards and I'll talk to you, I'm just going to get a card from every single person and I'm going to go a mile wide and an inch deep and play the numbers game until I find someone who's ready to go versus what you're talking about, which is deep and long game.
Yeah, and it depends on who that salesperson is and the service or product that they're selling. I mean, honestly, if they're, you know, we'll use the Offit example, if they're selling copy paper, you know, it's a smile and dial situation and they've got to be able to do that. But the really good salespeople, even at that level, and I don't know, Jason, you may be too young for this, but Harvey McKay is one of my favorites, Swim with the Sharks, and he was a stationary salesperson, but he always talked about, you know, making sure that you dig your well before you're thirsty and understanding how people are doing. Point on that is, you know, sales cycle could be a week, but the sales cycle could be 6 months. The difference being that, you know, when you're buying a process server or whatever it may be or some piece of equipment, it's a longer sales cycle. So you're constantly feeding that machine, if you will, and understanding where it comes from. And I'll give you a better example. I've been in marketing for 35 plus years, and I as a consultant off and on in agencies, a wide variety of different things. I think I can maybe on one hand list the number of people who I actually pitched directly as opposed to referred into by somebody else. And that all was about building relationships and building brand. MacGyver Marcom is a good example, pay it forward guy that I am. All of that goes along with that. So, it's the people that are willing. We all understand what a quota is. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and you've got to meet a certain part. The good sales leader or the good manager is going to be the person that says, okay, yes, bottom line is important, but how many people are you having authentic conversations with, which is a different KPI, and it's sometimes a little harder to look at. I've known salespeople, managers who said, you know what, you need to take out 5 different potential clients and 5 current clients a month, and I'm giving you a budget to be able to do that. You know, those are the type of people that you want to talk to.
And of course, like you preface this, which is, it depends on what you're selling. It depends on the sales cycle. It depends on how close to being a commodity is versus, you know, a considered purchase.
Right.
But I agree, there's always that balance of the relationships. It's the short term, the long term. It's the numbers game. You know, and putting in that effort. One of the things that you're doing, right, with Purpose Partnership is going in, helping companies as MacGyver, you know, short term, solving some problems, stabilizing marketing, branding, and then obviously, you know, doing some bigger, longer term things. All of that and all of the stuff that I do with companies and for companies requires change, right? Somebody wants to get better. They want to improve. They want to put new systems. They want to have new things in place. It requires change. That's usually something that individuals might resist, companies might resist. What's the best suggestion or advice, or what have you found helps with that well? If there's a leader who's like, I want to bring in a new CRM, or I even want to just, you know, build a new website, but everyone's fighting it. Like, what have you found works or can help with that?
You know, there's the Machiavellian way of looking at it, and, you know, and I have had CEOs that have come in and basically started the speech of, there's a new sheriff in town, and here's the door if you don't want to follow my advice and what we're going to do. But really, you know, change is scary. I mean, we have seen this over the last 2.5 years of the different changes that have occurred. And even, look, this last couple of weeks, and you've been through it, we just talked about that offline, but, you know, my partner is right around the corner from you, you know, and you have change of, okay, do I have electricity or not? Robin 6. The type of things that you work into. But we look for, and we do a lot of what we call pre-sale conversations, if you will. We look for that person that is, and honestly, our audience, which is up-and-coming entrepreneurs that, you know, have a budget, if you will, $1 to $5 million smaller companies that need help, we look for the folks that are risk-takers to a certain extent. But also, again, as we talked about earlier, surrounding yourself with the people that are going to do the job for you, who appreciate professionals who know what they're doing and can come in and work with that. And one of the things, and that's where we talked about partnership is basically that we are not a vendor, we're a partner. We actually embed ourselves, if you will, in that organization. So they get the frontline people, lack of a better way to put that, get to know us and understand, hey, you know what? They're not after my job. They're not after, you know, major change that's going to cause me to have problems or I'm going to have to learn something new. They want to help me and they want to help us succeed, which is a real difference between who we are versus some of the other agencies that we compete against.
Yeah, and I think that focus, like you said, and it's not just a word in your company title, but the partnership side, right, which is I'm on your team. We're all on this together. We're all, you know, a part of this success and I'm here to help. You know, I'm the bringer of help, not the, you know, the bringer of death and right. change and all the scary stuff that people are afraid of with consultants or even anything. Like you said, change is scary. And, it's something that we definitely resist as humans. And you know, I think that key, but I also think it's about having the right people. You even said it just from a client perspective, but even from a business owner and then down to the team is, do you have the right people who have that right mindset, right? Like you said, you're looking for risk taking ish, you know, entrepreneurs and people who appreciate a professional who's going to help them. So it's a different mindset. And for leaders and companies, you want your people to change. You got to have the right people, you know, like Jim Collins said, right people on the bus, and you got to have them in the right seats, and then everything can move forward much better, right?
Exactly. Yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah. I mean, and you run into the situation of, hey, let's try this for a couple of weeks and see what you think. I mean, a good example is I work with a lot of different people on my LinkedIn side that I do, working with salespeople where they go, I don't want to post a status update or share the information and say, okay, here's a 3-step process, click, 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 and you're done. And they go, oh, wow. Now I'm all of a sudden starting to get people who are paying attention to what I'm doing. Give them, you know, and we come in and we say, hey, let's try this. Let's give it a try, see where it goes. Email marketing campaign, we're going to try this and see if it works. If it works, then change becomes the hero, if you will. And they are learning as they go. And honestly, again, we work with the clients that we want to work with. And if we find resistance and major problems or lack of buy-in at any level, at certain levels, if you will, then we'll walk away from it. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, makes sense. And lesson in there too with your own team or staff, right? If you're a sales leader or manager, or even an employee at a team, a salesperson, is that at a certain point at which the company, you know, it needs people who are on board and are okay with change and obviously understand the risk and that, you know, the company, if it wants you to change, it's because there's a reason and the business seems to feel like that's the best decision. It's going to be a smart decision. And either you're on board or you're not, like you said.
Yeah. I love the ones that come back to us, you know, after a couple of months and say, yeah, you know, I wasn't really sure, but boy, now I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I'm loving it and having a ball doing it. So that's a big part of that as well.
Yeah. And again, it's that instinct, that initial primal safety mechanism for, you know, what has helped us dominate this planet and do what we do is the aversion to change in the moment, right? And then once we realize it, once we feel safe, once we, you know, embrace it and then really make the most of it, it can work really well. For you, what do you see as either in the past you've had this or you see with companies, what is the biggest challenge to scaling sales operations, sales teams, the right now or just in general?
Scale is, well, here because we work with entrepreneurs and smaller companies, and we have the same situation. You know, if Adam and I, for whatever reason, both had hurricane issues that we ran into or whatever it may be, there's nobody right now that I can slot in to say, okay, take over and do this. Or my LinkedIn training is a good example. I do one-on-one LinkedIn training with executives on a regular basis. And right now I could not hand that over to somebody because it's not a formulatic situation. It's more, hey, I've had 15 years of experience and this is what I do. Same thing with an entrepreneur. They come in, they've got a vision, they understand what they're going to do. I've worked with companies in the past that, you know, you've got a very strong leader at the head of the organization. He or she knows exactly what they want to do and understand that. Getting even at a VP of sales level or a sales manager level, being able to say, okay, this is the way it's worked for me and I'm doing really good with it. Now, John Smith, why don't you learn what I just did and do have the same instincts I do? That's difficult to be able to do. That's where my left brain partner comes in with processes and procedures and, you know, here's the 12 steps that we can do together. 10 steps, we don't use 12 steps, 10 steps that we can do together to be able to set things up and then apply that model, if you will, to additional campaigns. I've got an email marketing background. That's a good example. You know, we do a flight of five emails in a funnel sequence. If that sequence works well, the next time we're going to do another type of campaign, we will probably apply that template, if you will, to that success and see how that works or tweak it to the audience that we're going to use.
So final question, if you had to do it all over again, which what's interesting is you've started this and it's something you're growing and working on with Adam and then, you know, the things that you do individually. But what's interesting is if you apply this question to maybe even your clients, which is if they were to do it over again, start over again with a sales operation, a new sales process, a new sales program, what comes to mind? Like what either would you do differently that you've learned or would you just shake somebody by the collar and say, do this first when you're starting a sales process?
Yeah, and again, my partner is going to be very happy that I'm mentioning this. It's process and procedure. It's, excuse me, we did not have the luxury of saying, hey, let's spend 3 months and develop this organization and figure out where it's going. We hit the ground running, frankly. We had a client potential I was using as a sounding board, and he heard what we were at in mind and hired us on the spot. So we were up and running faster than we expected to be, but having procedures and policies and ways to do things, believe this or not, at 63 and almost 40, we're still learning as we go, which I think is awesome. I mean, I'm amazed that I'm 5 months into the new agency, 40 months into my career, and I'm still learning as I go on, you know, things that I had a conversation with a client this morning. He said, well, what if we structure it this way, in such a way that it makes a difference? I'm like, wow, never thought about that. A new thing, right? So harder on us millennials to do new things, quote unquote, as far as that goes. But we learn as we go. So we're having a ball doing that. So bottom line, to answer your question, it's really be open to you know, making sure you have structure, number one, but to try new things and see where that goes. So know that you're going to fail at some stuff. There's no doubt. You know, if you're not failing as an entrepreneur, then you're not trying hard enough.
Well, and I think the key is that trying things, being open to failure, it's going to happen, right? Like nobody as a baby just like figures out walking the first time. They have to fall a lot and then just keep getting up and trying. But then balance with the first part of your answer, which again, Adam is going to be excited about. And maybe I won't let him use that answer. I'll make him use some other answer. Yeah. Is the processes and the systems and not just winging it and trying new things all the time, but actually having some process and structure, because sales is challenging enough. And then when you just think, oh, I'll just hire a bunch of people and throw them out there and see what happens and let them experiment and fail, then you can't scale that, right? You can't repeat that at all. Like you might have some success, but you can't do it again.
Well, here's a great example. We'll leave with this. I've been doing consulting off and on for probably 20 of my 40 years career. this is the first time in my life I've had a partner. I've never had a partner. So I've worked with organizations, within agencies, within corporate, do whatever, teams, the like. Having a partner is the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me at 63 years old. And it's like, okay, and I can't live without this guy. And this week, like we talked about, has been a somewhat emotional couple of weeks because I've not been in touch with him on a daily basis. But having somebody who's got your back, and that's what we talk about on a regular basis, like, I got your back, I'll take care of this while you're out, or vice versa, pretty amazing thing.
I love it. I think that's great. And a great place to end this part one, especially to send people if they want to find more information about what you and Adam are doing. I know the website is apurposepartnership.com, so they can find it there. Also, you are on LinkedIn, obviously, and we're going to talk about that in the after show because I'm going to ask you some questions about LinkedIn. But if people look you up, Chuck Hester, H-E-S-T-E-R, they should be able to find you pretty easily if you've done your job on LinkedIn and connect with you on there, which is how we did. And I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate you sharing all this, especially, you know, in what you've learned and how you're open to things. And then also, obviously, if you're open to them, it makes your clients be open to it because you're not a hypocrite saying, hey, you should change and do these things. But then, you know, you're not. So I appreciate that attitude and that mindset and everything you shared here, Chuck. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Jason. Absolutely. Time flies.
It absolutely does. And for everyone tuning in, I appreciate you being a part of this journey. My goal to help shift sales from a dirty word to something the world trusts and respects, helping you close more deals, make more money in a way that feels right to you and is effective for your customers. That's why I bring on people like Chuck and his partner, Adam, as soon as we can get that one done, is to just help you see a different way, see how you can be effective, open your eyes, help you change, embrace change and things like that. And please make sure to tune in for part two, the after show. I have a whole bunch of questions I'm going to ask Chuck about, which includes MacGyver, LinkedIn. We're going to talk about changing and learning. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. And until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.